I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
Welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the Pod of Thunder and Rock and Roll, and Duff McKagan standing by with a joke of the week.
Hey, Chris Jericho. Duff McKagan calling from rainy Los Angeles. Did you hear about the drummer who locked the car keys in the van? Yeah, it took him 2 hours to get the bass player out. Thank you.
I actually had to think about that one for so long that when I told Duff, he said I should have changed that to the singer. Yeah, the bass player is too stupid to find the keys to get out. So there you go. I hope it doesn't happen to Fozzy tonight. We got a sold-out show in Philly after the sold-out show in New York City last night. It has been such a great tour. Anyways, we never let our drummer have the keys. He might lose them or steal them or something else. Another hilariously bad joke from Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Duff McKagan from Guns N' Roses and Walking Papers. They just put out a new record, and they're about to tour with Alice in Chains. Thanks to Mr. McKagan for taking the time out of his busy schedule to phone these in every week. And speaking of busy schedules, it's WrestleMania week. Everybody and their dog is in New Orleans right now, except for me, including Teddy Hart. He's returning to Talk as Jericho, and this time he's bringing friend Joey Janela is going to be there. Joey might sound familiar because he's putting on Joey Janela's Spring Break Part 2 in New Orleans. It's tonight. Joey might sound familiar because he took a crazy bump off the roof of a barn into a flatbed pickup truck a few years back. It was insane. The video went viral. Millions of views. We're going to talk about that, why he did it. If anything went wrong that wasn't caught on camera, what spurred him into doing stuff like that. And then Teddy Hart, of course. What a crazy few months he's had. He's out of jail. He got into a police chase and ended up spending a few months in the clink, but he's out now and wrestling every weekend all over the states. We'll find out what the last year has been like for him and what he's hoping for when it comes to WWE and getting another chance there. And once again, with Teddy, you say one question and 30 minutes later, you ask another one. The guy definitely is a storyteller, and you are going to enjoy him here today. And you're also going to enjoy Fozzy in Philly tonight, playing the Foundry, sold out. Last few dates of this leg of the tour were in Portland, Maine tomorrow night, Saturday, April 7th. And then Sunday, WrestleMania Sunday, we're in Hampton Beach, New Hampshire at Wally's. Don't forget, we're playing an early show. We're going on at about 4 o'clock or so, so we can all watch WrestleMania together afterwards. I will be staying at the venue and watching WrestleMania with all of you. So come see Fozzy at Wally's and then watch WrestleMania with us after. April 19th, we're playing the Buddha Rock Club in Fort Myers, Florida. April 20th, Amalie Arena in Tampa. 21st, the WJRR Earth Day birthday at the Central Florida Fairground in Orlando. April 22nd, WYBB 98 Rockfest in Charleston, South Carolina. Get all the information and tickets at FozzyRock.com and come join us for the VIP meet and greet as well. One of the best VIP meet and greets in the business. We sold out of basically all the shows this tour. We'll catch you next tour for all those. FozzyRock.com for all information. And stay here for all Teddy Hart information. Joey Janela, Teddy's crazy story about running from the cops, landing in jail. Let's start it now right here on Talk is Jericho. All right, so here in Las Vegas with Teddy Hart. And I was surprised to see you and happy to see you last night at your show, because I knew you've had a pretty interesting year, shall we say. But you're out and about. You're free.
Yes, I was in jail. I had a weird situation happen with a DUI. I had marijuana in my blood, so, and I got into a police chase. I think somebody put something in my drink. I don't remember anything that night. It was like one of the few times. I rarely get fucked up. I smoked a lot of weed in my day, but I never really had been like drugged and it had that feeling. So I tried driving home and I got pulled over, and I thought I was actually helping the police chase somebody down. I said, I guess that's what they said. I was like following a cop, and another cop came behind me and they were going to a call. It was on New Year's. So, but yeah, it cost me 7.5 months of my life. I spent 4 months in jail, and then WWE was nice enough to help me out. And we thought it'd look good for the judge if I went to the rehab program. So I had to claim that I was drinking. I don't really drink alcohol much, but Bob Killer was there, and he said, they won't put you in rehab for pot, and you don't have anything you can say. So if you want to say you're drunk and you have problems with alcohol, you can say that. We'll try to help you get in, and if that helps with your court case. I was facing 7 to 10 years in jail for assault on an elderly child or handicap and a DUI.
So, why elderly child handicap?
The guy that I let stay with me was disabled. He claimed he wasn't disabled at all, but he was able to sell that to the cops. I actually called the police on him to charge him with arson. He had lit a fire in our apartment. He had his own room, and he was, I don't know if he was smoking crack or what he was doing, but he was doing some shit, and the smoke detector went off, and he had a bunch of kittens in the room. He claimed he was going to help me with the kitten, my cat breeding business. So he liked animals. He seemed like a nice kid, and he ended up lighting a bunch of stuff on fire and trying to cover it up after. And I guess I didn't even know we had a smoke detector. We were smoking pot in the house all the time, and I didn't think the smoke detector even worked, but it did. And I was like 4 a.m. So I slapped him across the face and asked him what the fuck he was doing and why he would do that and endanger the animals and me and everyone else. We were in an apartment, so it would have killed everybody. If the fire had caught on, it would have wiped out the whole neighborhood. So I probably shouldn't have touched him, but I did. And then he got scared and he snuck out the window. And then the next day the cops came and they told me where he was. I guess he was in a pair of underwear when they found him on the street. He was at a store and they told me where he was. So I went and picked him up again. And his mother panicked, and I guess she thought we were a lot more mad than we were. So she called a separate group of police, and they ended up arresting me and my friend, saying that we were going to kidnap and confine this guy and had beat him up. And
so that was a previous charge other than this one that you had?
It was the same. So then 6 months later, I went to court and went to trial, and I ended up having a pill in my pouch, which was ephedrine from, I guess it was, we had taken some pills from Mexico that were like D-ball, like type of steroid stuff that I was taking. And one of the pills had ephedrine in it when they tested it. And that got me arrested in court. So I got locked up while I was in court facing this assault charge. And then that ended up making me have to piss. So now I have to piss for the government in Texas every month. I got to do a call in every day on a number. And if your name comes up on the number, you got to go take a piss test. So 3 months after that, I still couldn't get off marijuana. I'd never been able to stop smoking marijuana. This is now almost a year and a half of being clean off marijuana. It's the first time in my life I've ever not smoked weed. So I end up going to court for the trial after, and they postponed it again. So now I'm working as an Uber driver for a strip club, driving girls home. And that night was New Year's. I borrowed my girlfriend's truck, and she was out of town, and they ended up, I don't know what happened. Me and another guy both got f***ed up, and they put something in my drink and his drink, and we were both drinking waters. And so I just remember waking up in the car, couldn't see anything, tried driving home, didn't know where I was, and got pulled over, and then got into an hour and a half police chase, got tasered 13 times. And I guess whatever they was in my system, I couldn't get knocked out. So they kept tasering me, and I guess I wouldn't go out. I just remember holding onto the steering wheel because the guys had the guns on me, and the gun to my face finally. And the guy said, "Listen, motherfucker, let go of the steering wheel. The car is on the, I have a picture." I didn't realize I'd taken the car off of the edge of the thing, and it was actually balancing like this face down on the hood. So I was wondering why I couldn't press the gas anymore. I was trying to get out of there still, and the cops were holding the car. I had all four of my cats in the car.
What do you mean the car was like over the a precipice?
The cliff, yeah.
It, oh, wow.
It went off of like a, so I'll have to send you a picture of it. I didn't even know what it looked like until the mother was, she was pretty upset. Her truck was completely totaled. Obviously, insurance covered it, but she was not happy. And she works with Homeland Security, and her daughter was working with Homeland Security. And it was like my first real, I'd been married before, but this was like my first really hot young girlfriend that I liked, and I'd asked her to marry me, and it completely, it was like my last chance, I think. And I had a brand new Jaguar at the time. I'd saved all my money after losing everything the first, from the first divorce, which was like 3.5 years ago, and getting charged with sexual assault. I just beat the sexual assault charges. I'm the first guy I know of that was like adamant about, I didn't do anything. My wife owned an escort agency, and she brought girls over all the time, so we always had girls over, and I'm a nice guy to girls. I have no sex drive really from taking too much steroids over the years, so I'm like a fixed cat. So I was very upset about that, and they took everything from me, lost all my shit, everything I owned, and my house was like a $1 million house. I lost that. My cars, had 5 vehicles paid for, and because it was two people in the relationship, she had another girl, we opened a public company, or I guess I don't know what it would be, like some kind of like business. So it was like 2-1 on the vote. They voted me out, and everything was our business. We had all put it under for tax reasons, everything under her name, and I lost it all then, and then built it up again to get a nice house in Texas and a new car. And my car was repoed while I was in jail, so that was everything. So now I ended up being homeless, basically on the run from the cops. And WWE forgot to send my piss test to the PO officer in Texas. So I got a warrant for my arrest, and now I was wrestling on the run. So every show I did, I never told anybody, because wrestling, it's so much stuff on social media now. But I was I had first time ever taking a lot of multiple bookings, where I was like trying to be hungry, and promoters were taking a chance on me. And I was very humble at this stage, and I shut my mouth and did whatever they wanted me to do. And it ended up, I had like 30 bookings. So I did all my shows that I could. And then I went to pick up a cat. Finally, I wanted to bring the cat back. I'd lost my other cats during this DUI. The cats were taken from me. And two of them went to my girlfriend, and the other one went back to my ex-girlfriend, Mr. Money. And then the other one died. He got hit by a car like a month after. So I end up losing now. I have none of my cats left. I had 35 cats. And wow. I had a shelter in Edson. And the guy that was taking care of my cats, he ended up having his dad pass away. And his dad was his sponsor. His dad fell off a ladder in Mexico, hit his head, and died. And so he couldn't take care of my cats anymore. So I end up losing all my cats. And I bought a new cat from my ex-girlfriend. Finally, the restraining order was over, and we were communicating a little bit. And that was my wife's girlfriend, because I had the two wives or whatever for the 3 or 4 years doing that stupid reality TV show. She was nice enough to give me one of the kittens from Mr. Money's litter. And they're like very smart, special breed from Mexico. So I bought that cat like an idiot. I went to the airport thinking I could pick it up, and they ran my name through customs because it was a Canadian package, and they arrested me right at the airport. And so I got put in a Philadelphia jail for 3 weeks. And that was the worst experience of my life, because the jails in Texas are bad, but the Philadelphia jail was overpacked. So you do an intake where you're like stuck in a room for supposed to be like a day, maybe at the most. I was there for 4 days on a floor with 60 guys in a room about this size. Obviously, you can't see how big the room is on yeah. a radio podcast, but 60 guys laying down.
It's a hotel room size.
With a little blanket, and that was it. And then finally, they move you into another detox part, because most of the guys are coming off heroin or coke or meth or crack or whatever. So, and I'm in good shape, happy, sober, and I'm now facing 7 to 10 years plus skipping trial, missing court, and another thing for bail jumping, which is all like an extra 5 years. Now I'm facing like 12 to 15 years in jail. There's no way I'm going to get a deal. And my lawyer calls and says he won't represent me anymore after I gave him $15,000, like the last of my money that I had. So I was really, I was scared shitless and so depressed. The first time I was in jail, I was in for 3.5 months, and I trained like a madman in there, push-ups every day, handstands. And this time I was so depressed, I just sat there and I thought I was done. So I my faith in God was really, I didn't want to, they said, you should maybe read the Bible or something. I said, this, I don't even know if there is a God anymore. So I've been through so much shit, and I'm a pretty nice guy. I said, I got a bad rap. I said, on top of my wrestling career being a complete wash, I said, I just wasted my whole life. I said, and every backflip I did, and every fan I shook hands with, and guys in wheelchairs, I said, man, I always thought those guys were angels, and somehow I was gonna get some vindication later, and I'm f***ed. And really went into a dark hole in jail. And like 3 weeks in, I got a call, and they said, you're gonna be transported. I said, are they gonna fly me? They said, no. They said, this, brace yourself, because this is going to be the worst ride of your life. And like, how, what happens? Like, you're locked in the back of a little truck, handcuffed at the ankle and at the wrist, and you got to take a shuttle basically with all these other guys from Philadelphia to Texas, but they stop in every single city to pick up guys. We did the same loop four times. It took me 17 days in the back of a fucking truck. They could not put an animal, a cat or dog, in a truck like this without getting charged for animal cruelty. You'd get put in jail. And they had six guys each thing locked up in here. And one of the guys that was transporting me happened to be an old wrestler. And he gave me some chewing tobacco, and he let me put my handcuffs around my ankles and get them off my thing, because you're shackled here, but it's a loop. So he let me like sweep them off, and he let me sit on the back part of the truck because there's a little spot for the girls. If there's no girls in there, he let me sit in the back. So I had a jacket and a little thing I rolled up into a pillow, which was a bunch of McDonald's wrappers, because the only highlight of this trip is they stop at McDonald's every 6 hours or Wendy's so you can get a hamburger.
Wow.
You piss in a bottle, and they stop every 18 hours at a different jail to check in. So you got fingerprinted every time you went to a different state, different city, different jail, and you just got put in a little holding cell because you're not part of their actual, you're not one of their prisoners. You're part of like another thing. So
why did you have to get transferred from Philly to Texas? Why?
Because my trial was in Texas.
Oh, I see.
So I was in Philly, living in Philly, gotcha, trying to take bookings because it was the central area for me. And I didn't want to keep flying.
So you have to get fingerprinted every time you
stop time, and the guards, they didn't want to do any work with us. And we only would get the one meal from the jail because they didn't want to feed us because they weren't getting paid. And I guess it's all about the money for the jails, how it was. So after all that was said and done, I got moved to Texas, and then they put me back in Green Bay, which I promised myself I'd never go back to this fucking place. It's the biggest one-floor jail, but it's not a state jail, so everyone thinks there's gyms, and in state jail, it's different. I'm in county jail facing charges waiting, so it's a really shit system. The food is fucking garbage. The only thing you get is commissary, really, and I was lucky this time I had money on my books. Tyson Kidd had put some money in my books, and I had taken some money with me, so I had $1,000 on me. So when I went to jail the second time, I was able to buy commissary, which is like chips and like soups. And white supremacist guys were real dickheads. They were assholes. Black guys were really nice to me. Black Panthers, Crips, I don't know what the Bloods were, and the Spanish guys, one of them recognized me from Lucha Libre shit in Mexico, and he told a bunch of guards who I was. And the guards had remembered me from the last time I was there because some of the guards had done anti-bullying seminars with me when I was working with the police in Texas for school shows before I'd been charged. So they were really nice to me, and they would watch my videos through the bars, and they'd show all the guys highlight videos to Teddy Hart. And I've given Brett shit on some stuff, but Brett's name in jail, your name in jail, because your podcast, Weird Things, were so popular. And Chris Benoit, too, guys loved him. That they treated me like a king in jail. So guys would make me food. I'd pay for the food, but they'd make all the food, and we'd eat together and pray together. And I started doing push-ups with a couple black guys again, like week three, because I was really depressed. I wasn't going to do shit. I remember I was getting fat. I could feel it. And they finally, a couple guys said, why don't you start doing some push-ups and stuff, and we'll work out with you at night. So I started doing little group workouts, and I got a new lawyer, public defender this time, and he said, they up and they've lost your papers, so they don't know you skipped trial, and they think you've been sitting in here this whole time, so it looks like you've been in jail for like 9 months straight when you got three and then got out. So we're gonna make a deal right now before they figure it out. Would you take five years in jail? And I said, well, is that the best deal you can get me? He goes, let me see what I can do here. So somehow, I don't know what happened, but I knew some guys from Homeland Security, and I worked with some guys with FBI stuff from my dad and his brother, and like a bunch of cops knew me, and some lawyers I met doing my reality TV show, because my girlfriend was working for Homeland Security, ended up having a meeting, and I showed up at their meeting, and they were really nice to me. So I saw her in court, this lawyer. She wanted $100,000 from me to get me out. And she was in court the day I was there, and she smiled at me and winked at me. And the guy came back, he goes, the judge has just offered you probation for the whole thing. He goes, will you take 7 years probation? And I said, I'll sign right now.
Wow.
So he said, listen, I might even be able to get you 5 years probation instead of seven. And I said, and he goes, we'll get you adjudication. So if you can do this, you're out, and you'll clean. It'll take your record away, and you can apply for early probation release after 3 years. So I said, and I signed, and I ended up getting out of jail instead of doing the 10 years or seven minimum. They wouldn't come off. I went to trial four times waiting before I got charged for the DUI, trying to get this thing knocked down. They wouldn't budge. And it turned out my friend Paul, you'd have interviewed him, he was here, the black guy that was with me before, he ended up being the witness, and he testified against me after 14 years of friendship with him. He was the guy that said I slapped the guy and ratted me out to the courts so he didn't get charged. And then, and he didn't show up for trial. I got out of it, and I never talked to him again.
How did you get it busted down to just 7 years of probation?
Who the fuck knows? Jeez. I don't know how. That's why I said my faith in God was restored. I ended up getting 70 bookings since I've been out. I've wrestled every week, and I've never wrestled a full schedule. And this is another thing where I give Brett and you and like Eddie Guerrero and like Dean Malenko, all the guys that were workhorses. Like I go back to the Rey Mysterio too. Like how many matches you guys must have been doing, because I've never wrestled 3 days a week.
Right, you never had that.
I never had a schedule. My schedule was like once a week, maybe one show every 2 weeks even. So I always had time to heal, so I could do all my stuff. And now I realize why guys said you're doing too much or less is more.
I always figured out in the end, right?
Yeah. So I wish I could go back in time and apologize and like not have done all that shit, because then you're pigeonholed into doing so many more moves or they expect you to. So I've modified my style now. This is Joey. I modified my style now and tried to come up with different ways of looking good and getting a good pop and having a great match, but being able to prolong my career, because now this is what I do to make money. I've never had to support myself off indie wrestling, so pictures count.
What did you do before?
I would always sell marijuana and steroids, and usually I had my wrestling school for kids, and I owned a gym. My dad had the gym, and I had property, so I'd rent out rooms and stuff. And
so how is it now being a full-time
I apologize to every wrestler ever was hard on, and I had no idea what you guys really been through. And same thing with Brett, when Brett used to talk about being on the road and then renting a car and driving to a show and the loneliness of walking down a hotel by yourself. And like, I have no girl with me now. Usually always had a girl and the cat. I don't bring him around too. I have one cat I'm training, but even without the cat, it's just so lonely. And I had no idea what the guys in wrestling had been through. So my respect level for guys, especially WWE guys that traveled the world, and any wrestler that really has to go out and that's what he does to support his family, my hat's off to you. And I wouldn't wish being a wrestler on my worst enemy now. I wish I have like a 50-50 in my head. I kind of wish I wasn't a wrestler, and I wish I could go back and slap myself in the face and gone to school or university or something. But then I still have these shows where like I got to meet you last night, and I still sometimes, we had a great match with Joey, and sometimes I'll have these matches where the fans come up after and say, you're still one of the best guys we've ever seen, and you're phenomenal, and you're in great shape for your age, and we watched you since you were a kid, and they're like 4 years old. I'm wrestling now 21 years. Mm-hmm. So I forget now how long I've been going. I lived in a up reality because of marijuana and in the past GHB, where I was like, wasn't really aware of time and aging and wasting years and years and years just smoking pot and not doing anything with my life. So I woke up and I heard a guy say to me in jail, you don't want to wake up someday and look at 20 years later that you just basically slept and fucking wasted 20 years of your life. And I was like, man, I'm almost 40. Conan used to tell me, it's going to happen. You'll get older. You can't stop it. At times, you know, I used to laugh at him. And now I'm like, all those things people said that sounded like shit, maybe they were a lot smarter than I thought they were. And just shut the fuck up and pray to God that I'm walking. You appreciate the air, the meal, the everything means something after you go to jail, especially if you're facing a lot of time and then you don't get. And I've been really lucky for all the years I sold marijuana and did crazy shit with girls and like, I probably should have been in jail for all sorts of other shit over the years. But for me to get charged with something I didn't do, now I know the feeling of like the guy in the hurricane where he was like not guilty and having to sit in jail for something he didn't do. And then getting off when I didn't think I was like that feeling of like winning a lottery. Because you don't realize what your life is worth until you're locked up and sitting in a jail cell in a pair of boxers with a bunch of fucking strangers. So,
yeah. And we just rejoined here. You mentioned Joey. Joey Janela is here. And the story of Teddy Hart, which I know very well. I don't really know anything about Joey. I've heard a lot about your name over the last few months, years, year maybe. But you are in the business, but you're also a mover and a shaker. You got your own promotion. You got a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah, it's just I've been actually in the business for 12 years now. I've been wrestling. I got in the business when I was 15.
Where are you from?
New Jersey.
Okay.
So I was kind of like a backyard wrestler. And We knew this local wrestler. We would see him at the local shows, and his name was Dirtbag Dan. And we thought his gimmick was that he botched moves and he was just pathetic.
Right.
But he just was a shitty wrestler. So we seen him at the movie theater one day, and we said, "Hey, Dirtbag Dan, come backyard wrestle with us." He said, "Sure." We're like, "Yeah, Dirtbag Dan's coming." And he was in the business, so I said, "Dan, how do I get in the business?" He says, "Oh, just come with me. Set up this ring, and someone will teach you how to bump." Uh-huh. And then, like, 2 months later, I went to the promoter. I said, "Yeah, I trained in this school in the next state over."
With Dirtbag Dan.
Yeah. And that was my start in the business.
And that was it, right?
That was it.
But I want to talk now, like, as far as at WrestleMania, you've got your show. And tell me about, like, how old are you?
28.
So you got your own promotion at 28, and you do pretty good business. Joey Janela's Spring Break?
Yeah.
Talk about it.
Yeah, it's Game Changer Wrestling. They're a newer company in New Jersey. They kind of gave me the reins with the show last year that we thought, you know, how can we make a midnight show work WrestleMania weekend? And we thought, you know, going into it, it could be a complete f-ing disaster. But it went really well. We drew about 1,200 people. And that was that was midnight. We had Dan Severn wrestle Matt Riddle. And I wrestled Marty Jannetty and some batshit spectacle. Mm-hmm. We had Dink the Clown on the show and Glacier. And it was kind of nostalgia plus the new, and it, like, putting those dream matches together. And this year, you know, we have 1,000 tickets pre-sold.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
There's so many people there for WrestleMania weekend and so many shows, and they all do really well.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, we have the most tickets sold over Progress, Evolve.
Now, why? Why is that? What does your show have that's different?
I guess just the buzz from last year, and just it was a drunken spectacle.
People, so it's a party.
It's a party plus a wrestling show. It goes to 4 a.m. And we got great Sasuke this year, which he hasn't wrestled in the States in 10 years. Mm-hmm. So he's excited, and everyone's excited to see him. So we're doing really good. We got, like, Pierre Carl Adelaide on the show. And
are you doing this show, Teddy?
I was supposed to. I'm now begging Joey to work something out with the owner of GCW, which is usually a pretty good friend of mine, but we've been having some problems.
Like a couple.
Yeah. Joey's, like, done amazing stuff. I remember when he was a kid, he came up to me and said, "I had a picture with you." And I said, "Oh, I don't even know if I can't be that old." And he's like, "Yeah, I watch you in Jersey All Pro. You're, like, one of my favorite wrestlers." And they wanted me to do a job to him one night, and I was like, "That I don't even know the kid, and he doesn't look like he doesn't much. I heard he's the shits from another guy." And then I heard another guy tell me he was awesome after. Yeah. And I'm like, well, I watched him for a couple more years, and he became, like, the biggest thing and hardest working wrestler I've ever seen for indie wrestling guys, and travels every like, he's got the most bookings in, I think, indie wrestling. So my respect went up for him, and I said, "I don't know how good he is in the ring, though. I'm gonna have a match." This is right when I was on. This is when I was supposed to be in jail. I was out doing these matches, so every match was my last match, waiting for customs to come through the door, hoping, you know, they don't. But we had 2 5-star matches. I would put them, like, up against everything until I saw you and Kenny Omega in Japan. Like, I thought it was one of the best matches of the year. Yeah. We did 2, and he was phenomenal. And my respect went up for him huge. And then as a businessman, I started watching what he did and how he handled himself. And he's got a beautiful girlfriend, and he trained her, and she's tough as nails. And he does a great job basically marketing himself and T-shirts, and no one ever helped him out. He did everything on his own. So I knew he was coming. I didn't know he was wrestling me, so I got the last-minute call that Joey Janela was taking the place of Sammy Callahan. So I was like, well, I said, politicking now, I got to play the game. I said, "Joey, if I can get maybe to come in the back and meet Chris Jericho," I said, "would you put me back on your GCW show?" So he says, "Maybe we can work something out." He started laughing. So, and then we went to the bar hoping we could meet you. And then Disco Inferno was so cool that he made sure we got to see you. And I knew you were really nice because of Velocity and with in Edmonton and Calgary. And I'd already met you a couple times, but you never know with the superstar guys in wrestling. Sometimes you meet them one time and they're super nice. The next time you see them, they barely remember your name and your face, and I knew you weren't like that, but you never want to overstretch your limits and be like, yeah, Chris is my best friend and I know him really well. Well, why don't you have his phone number? It's like, oh, I lost it. And so I just told Joey, I said, if he sees us, I said, he'll probably be cool. He's always been super cool. So Joey and I came down after a match. We didn't even have time to change. I was still in my gear.
You were still in your gear, which you wear stuff like that on the street anyway, so I can never tell with you.
Yeah, I've been smart enough to make my tracksuits into wrestling gear because I lost all my gear and I can't afford to go back to Mexico and get new gear. Guy named Busio makes really awesome gear, so I usually go down and get him to make my stuff for me. I haven't had time to go back to Mexico. I just got my papers and stuff, so I can go between Canada, Mexico, and the States now. My probation officer gave me permission. So
you got a picture with Teddy when you were a kid?
Yeah, because Teddy was known as the loose cannon. Like, was Teddy gonna show up to the show? What if Teddy does show up? Is he gonna shoot moonsault and try to murder somebody, or he's gonna cut a promo? Homicide and do it for the kids, moonsault for the children. But it was like Teddy Hart was him and Trent Acid. They were the coolest
guys, right? Yeah.
So I had a picture with him, and then
was kind of your reputation back then, right? Even kind of now to an extent, but like, what's he gonna do?
Yeah, I try to make that kind of like a cool thing, though. Like, you never know what moveset I'm going to do. Try to always come up with new moves still and innovate. And then also, if I can sell you on an injury, I think selling is key. I'll sell right to the end, or even walk back to the hotel with a limp, even if my leg's not sell, or I'll sell my knee, or try to get more out of it. And that's out of respect for Brett and all the guys that told me years ago, like, what the f*** are you doing getting up from that? Why are you not selling that? And it's like, okay, now I understand. I didn't realize the business of what this is. It's about longevity and being able to, that's why I don't suck guys' dicks or kiss guys' asses on these promos much, and I'm pretty straight up with guys. But AJ Styles is one of the few guys that he's done amazing for so long, and you were the other guy that you outlasted everybody. I'm like, dude, he was wrestling. Brett should still be wrestling then. I said, Dynamite Kid's in a wheelchair. Benoit wouldn't, if he was in the state they say he was, that his brain was like that, and that's all true, then these guys would have been dead. I mean, if Eddie Guerrero wasn't, if it wasn't a conspiracy and he wasn't poisoned, he really had a heart attack and just died, if that's all the way it was, I don't know how these guys died. Everyone, you know, there's always stories and like rumors.
What's the Eddie story that you heard?
I mean, just bullshit wrestling talk, but I heard Eddie Guerrero could have been poisoned, that somebody had poisoned him. Like, I don't know who would have and how would have happened. I heard from smart people that Eddie had done a lot of stuff in the past and had taken a lot of steroids, so that was probably what happened with him. Same with Davey Boy. Like, there's a story that Davey Boy was taking some bad steroids and he'd been poisoned by his drug. Like, I heard stories from other people that just Davey lived a hard life. Same with, but then you look at Jim Neidhart, it's still alive, and he's obviously been through a lot of crazy shit, but his genetics, people always said Jim Neidhart's like a genetic freak, and Jim's still pretty healthy. I think he could still bench 4 plates or something crazy. I know he has a bit of dementia. I heard he's having problems with his memory, but otherwise he's in pretty amazing shape. You never know for who, but none of those guys can work anymore. They were all, and then you went in the ring, and I'm like, I see Chris still having great matches in WWE, but I know he's wrestling a certain style. I wanted to wrestle you. I said, I always wanted to wrestle Shawn Michaels and Chris Jericho, and the only guy I would think of was like that level. And I didn't watch a lot of Kenny Omega. I'd wrestled him once. Kenny Omega was a beast. So I watched a bunch of Kenny Omega stuff right before your match with him. And I couldn't believe how many good matches he was having. I said, killer, 5-star match. I heard a 5-star match from Meltzer. Like, and nobody gets the 5-star match. So I watched him, and he was like one of the best guys I had ever seen. And I'm like, I wonder if Chris is going to go down there and mail it in, or what's he going to do? I mean, that WWE stuff is a different type of wrestling. And then when I watched you, man, it restored my, I was in a room with like 20 guys. We're all watching it, and they were so amazed. And these are wrestling critic type of guys that were like all smart indie fans, pricks. And they all were tears in their eyes on that match, man. And it was such a hard show to go. Every match was a good match. For you guys to do that much work and steal the show, I'm like, man, you never know what Chris Jericho is going to do and how good he really is. I put you over as the best guy in wrestling history now, because nobody, including Shawn Michaels, that's the only other guy that I think could still go back in the ring right now, just out of the blue in a pair of pants, and just hit the ring and have a five-star match.
You learn
this,
and I'm sure you figure this out. Like, when you start in the business, you think, like, I remember one time Nick Bockwinkel told me, we had a TV taping in Winnipeg, and he said, like, your stuff is great. You just do too much. And I remember thinking, like, total respect, but in the back of my mind going, this. I mean, you just can't do it. So, you know, what do you know? And then it doesn't take long to realize that the guy was so right, obviously. Oh. And once you learn the psychology of wrestling, it really is not doing a million things, but where you place. You guys have heard all the shit. So when you're younger, you don't see that. You think, oh, come on. That's just because the guy can't do it or he's old. But that's what wrestling is. And if you can embrace that and figure it out and really get it, there's no reason why you can't stay at a high level for years and years and years.
Oh, you're absolutely right.
You know? When you started, Joey, who were some of the guys that you worked with, like, that are on the scene right now? Or, like, did you start with the Ring of Honor guys? Or
man, it was hard because I really started in Kearney, New Jersey, ticket seller wrestling promotion. So it would be like a bunch of like local guys to sell tickets, and then they would give the one name.
They would give you like 20 tickets, and to be on the show, you had to sell them.
Yeah, that like bands, you know. But
yeah,
I like when they came to my hometown, I'd be like, the promoter, his name is Dapper Johnny, Big Karn. He would go, "How many tickets can you sell, kid?" And then you go, "Yeah, I can sell like 10." And then I'd sell like 2. And he'd be like, "You cocksucker." I'll still put you on because I like you.
Right.
But yeah, and then like not until I started really going to wrestling schools and seminars, I started getting around. And not a lot of guys come out of Jersey. Like, it's like me, like Jay Lethal. And like really, it's really an island. A lot of guys just.
So what's your main promotion that you work with?
Right now, I wrestle for every promotion.
He's the most booked guy in indie wrestling maybe. Like, I've never seen a guy that work. Every time I see him, he's got 3 shows, and he's driving to one or flying to another.
Obviously, we all know WWE, we all know NXT, we all know Ring of Honor. What are some of the bigger indies out there?
PWG.
Okay, you do PWG?
Started working for, yeah.
AEW.
That's Chicago?
Chicago. There's Limitless. Shows I know that I've done with Joey because he's helped me get bookings because of my match with him. That allowed me to get seen, and he was nice enough to go on the mic after, and he put me over as the best heart ever, and that he was a huge fan of Brett, that he always thought that I did more than all those guys, and his help, and I don't know how the fuck he did it, but he built an image, and like he took that one bump, obviously, in CZW. I don't know if you're, I think it was GCW, GCW.
Which bump was it?
You gotta see it.
Oh, yeah.
It was supposedly the craziest bump in like wrestling.
Yeah, tell us about what was it?
Well, deathmatch wrestling. I've always been a big fan of the FMW and Big Japan Wrestling, you know, when I was getting the tapes, when I was like 9 years old, you know, great Sasuke, Onita, doing all these crazy death matches. These guys are dead. And then ECW went away, and then Combat Zone came to my area, and they were just a different level.
And CZW is like a death match company, right?
Yeah. And that was owned by John Zandig, who was just this wild guy with a beer belly and a fake tan and whatnot. I wore a pair of jeans. And a couple years ago, we were on Facebook, and all of a sudden, John Zandig appeared on Facebook. We're like, no way, this is the real guy. So I started pushing his buttons. I said, hey, you want to throw me off a building? Because he did a bump with Nick Mondo where he threw him off a building through like a bunch of tables, like 40-foot drop. So I said, yeah, you won't throw me off a building. So he came out of retirement to throw me off a building.
And it was on fire, too, the table. It
made ESPN the next day.
Is this the one? Like, is it outside or something? I've seen this. So how high up were you?
It was like 35 feet.
So you're 35 feet, and he's got you kind of like in a like a
shitty press.
Death Valley Driver. Yeah, that's what it looked for. What's the like? What's seen as finished? Like the F5. Oh, not the F5. The what is it called? The FU.
Yeah.
Whatever they call it. Attitude adjustment. Sorry, we're a couple of idiots here. Yeah. So he's got you over his shoulders like a John Cena AA.
Yeah.
And is he jumping off the roof? And no, he throws you.
He comes off the roof with me into a pickup truck that has like light bulbs on it. For some reason, it's on fire. And for some reason, there's a barbed wire net at the bottom that no one can see. I don't know why I did this, but really it's what kind of made my career in the last couple of years. Because after that, the next day it was on ESPN on the ticker.
So how are you bumping on that? What are you doing? Just in the back of the truck on the light bulbs?
And he was right about the spring of the back of the truck was falling on a wrestling ring. And he was right about that. But the barbed wire net was unnecessary.
So no one even saw it. It
basically chopped off my thumb.
You don't have a fingerprint. but is he jumping too? How is he landing?
Well, he broke his back.
Yeah, he broke his back on it. He never wrestled again. He had one match after that, but he never was the same after that.
How does he land?
He he landed like a pencil, like because the truck was too close.
Yeah, it shattered his hips, didn't it, kind of thing? Something like that.
Did he land on the ground?
Yeah.
No, he landed in the truck, but he broke his back because he had to guide me in, because if he didn't guide me in, I would have landed on the roof of the truck.
Oh, my God.
And I probably would have died. So when we were up there, he asked me to press. He said, oh, it's too close. I said, oh, well, I'm dead. And then I went in, and I was fine. I felt fine. It was crazy. And then I look at my thumb, and it's dangling off. I'm like, well, I need to get that stitch back on.
So what is, and listen, we've all done crazy stuff here. Obviously, you guys have done much more. Hey, step in a wrestling ring, you're taking your life in your hands.
Always.
And all of us have done stuff. Like, we talked about the crazy bump that I had in Vegas, that was the worst bump I should have died.
An actual ring bump.
But that was an accident. This is you're doing this on purpose, yes. Throwing yourself off the building. What's the mindset of that?
It's just, it was just kind of, we showed up to it and that was there. And it was kind of my fault because I was a big fan of this guy doing this bump before to somebody. And that kind of ended that other guy's career. And I was always like, it was like, you remember LimeWire, Kazaa, where you download music?
Yeah.
Like, it would be like, you type in like hardcore deathmatch wrestling and that was the bump.
Yeah.
You're like, wow, this shit's batshit. I said, I need to do that one day.
It's so hard to get noticed. There's so many indie wrestlers and promotions that joy by taking that one bump. I mean, like, you're talking about the stuff these guys have to do. The amount of work an indie wrestler has to do to get his name out there is almost impossible. So for him to take that chance and then have to deliver match after match after match after match, because you only got that one bump. If you're not good after that, then he's f***ing himself. And he, every match he had, I watched the guy go from like just an average kid to one of the best indie wrestlers ever. And he,
well, like
he
I said,
have to watch him. He's unbelievable making. Like, I wrestled him last night and I don't have a scratch on me. And people thought he killed me on a brainbuster off the top and a package pile driver and a bunch of stuff. And I rarely put guys over because I have a certain level. I always think like you can watch my videos and go back in time for 20. I've been wrestling 21 years and my moveset's always been like one of the hardest movesets on the planet, even to still this day. So I always pride on myself that if a guy's going to, we're going to talk wrestling as an athlete, I slam dunk from the 3-point line. Not too many guys can. And if you can, I'm kissing your ass and bowing down to you. But a compliment out of me means that's all I got is my word. So when I say to you, this guy's unbelievable, and I think the WWE should take a chance on him because he lives a clean lifestyle, and he's done this all on his own. No one ever helped him out. He took that one bump, but every other bump he's taken, and all the guys he makes look good. Like, and
it's interesting because, like I said, I heard the name Joey Janela. But you mentioned phenomenal. That bump. I saw it, but also from your spring break thing, you know, the Joey Janela spring break. But it's weird that by doing that, it did kind of make your name. But dude, like 1 inch either way, and you're dead.
Dead.
It was, right?
I would have definitely.
But and you weren't. Is it a thrill seeking thing? Like you got to jump out. You mentioned PJ Black earlier, PJ Black just skydiving and losing his fingers, or like, is it something you have to do because it's in your, is like a thrill that you have to have, or did you do it to make your name?
I did it to make my name, and you know, and there's no independent wrestler that was going to take that bump in this day and age with all the knowledge of concussions and prolonging your wrestling career. It's like, that was batshit crazy, and that was a different level. And Mick Foley, he came up to me, he goes, you know, that is the craziest wrestling bump of all time.
Now, for him to say that,
yeah,
because once again, the craziest bump of all time to me was Mick Foley's bump. Yeah. I guess you could ask him the same question. Why did he do it? Because he wanted to make something special, right?
Yeah.
But once again, that's on a WWE pay-per-view in front of millions, exactly. And you're doing it. You know, I don't even know how many people. Were there even any people there?
There was like 500. 600,
okay, so there you go. But then now it goes viral.
Yeah, 100 million views.
100 million views?
Next to the Joey Ryan video, it's the most viral independent wrestling.
What's the Joey Ryan video?
Well, the dick flip video.
Yeah, let's just explain it to people who don't know. No. Yeah, he uses his cock to flip people's, he just gives people hip tosses using his cock, right?
Yeah, next to that, it's the most like.
I had to take it. I swear I'd never take it, but he asked me to take it. I said, you know what? I said, after going to jail and everything I've been through, I said, I can't say no to the dick flip. I'll just do it and get it over with. He doesn't really grab your dicks, thank God. It was more like the inside of your leg.
This is a great story. When Scotty Too Hot, he was doing the worm, and Viscera was like, I ain't never taken that as a finish. That's the stupidest finish ever. And Vince heard it. Next week, Vince was losing to the worm. So there you go. The worm got him that night. But, I mean, so 100 million views. Now, do people know
this is Joey Janela, or does it just say craziest bump ever? Does it have your name in it?
It's like different videos, like it'll pop up on random things, and it'll be like some video captures will be like two idiots fall off a barn,
gotcha,
through a truck, and then other ones will be like professional wrestler Joey Janela gets thrown off a barn and whatever.
So did that work then? Like did it?
Yeah, it made me. If I didn't take that bump, I don't know if I'd be sitting here right now.
Right.
But after that, it was like really, you have to work really extra hard because to everyone's on the outside's eyes, I'd look like a garbage, what they say, a garbage wrestler. Like Jim Cornette goes, Joey Janela is a barnyard.
Oh, he must love you.
Garbage.
That
on top of me doing matches against like Invisible Man and whatnot, he absolutely. Absolutely.
Joey was smart with gimmick
now.
Matches. He did a lot of weird little, like, he wrestled a lot of legends. So he'd bring in different legends and put them over and make them look good.
For your shows?
For all these different shows.
All different shows. I would just go online and be like, hey, I want to wrestle Scott Norton. And then a promoter would be like, yeah, that's a good match. Let's book Joey Janela versus Scott Norton. And then I'd wrestle Scott Norton. We'd have an awesome, this is like last year, an awesome match with Scott Norton. Scott Norton's like, I feel alive again. And then, like, another promoter would be like, oh, let's book Joey Janela versus Scott Norton again. Like, and then
Norton's the best, man.
Yeah,
I love that guy.
Oh, he's incredible. But like, I wrestled Marty Jannetty. We had an incredible match last year at Spring Break. Like,
great worker.
Yeah, it was awesome for what he is. His ankle was mangled.
Yeah.
And he was a little hopped up on something, but not. I controlled him to the point that he wasn't drunk, but he was on a little something for his ankle. But I wrestled him, Glacier.
Glacier. Yeah. Filthy Ray.
Yeah.
Fat Fingers of the Magician. He always trying to do magic tricks, but his fingers are too fat and he would f*** it up every time.
just like there's a line of wacky names I've wrestled at promoters.
Virgil too, right?
Virgil I've wrestled. He gave me Canadian Destroyer. Like, it was one of the worst Canadian. Marty gave me a Canadian Destroyer as well. His was actually good.
Well, all you got to do is just basically take a sunset flip.
That's all me.
Right.
But Virgil, oh, that's a disaster right there. It's the slowest Canadian, people call it the slowest Canadian destroyer in the history of professional wrestling.
So you're just going online for like, it's interesting in this day and age, you could just say, I want to have a match with Scott Norton, and then someone will pick up on that. That's become kind of like your gimmick now?
Yeah, just like, I've wrestled like every big indie name like in the last 2 years because of just me. You know, also I watch a lot of the way MMA fighters handle their business on social media now, and everything's like calling someone out, or this guy's a, so it's a little bit of a shoot. Like, mm-hmm. I shoot on a lot of guys, and a lot of guys know the deal now, but when I first started doing it, they're like, this kid.
Yeah, I thought he was trying to shit talk and shoot, and then I'm like, dude, I remember you a couple of years ago. I'm like, now you're this superstar. I'm like, you better be able to go.
Yeah.
If you can't go, if you want to wrestle and you're talking all this shit, and I remember like, 28 minutes into the match, I said, man, this guy is tough as nails. He is really that tough. Like, I said, he doesn't really look like much. I said, he's good looking face, but doesn't really have a body. I said, he can't be that tough. His cardio can't be that good. I see him smoking a cigarette and shit. I'm like, I don't know, man. And then he was put him up there as one of the hardest working guys, self-made, hardest working wrestlers I've ever met in my life. And I met everybody.
But that's also kind of, it's something you touched upon, and we can talk about this. Like, we're like almost three different generations. Yeah. I mean, you and I are close, but you're 9 years younger than me, maybe, or something like that. When I started in the business, I was too small and I trained every day. I worked out like a motherfucker, got to about 220 or so, and was still small. And then as time went on, Sean Waltman got in, and then HBK became the champ. And then it wasn't so much having to be 240 pounds. You could just be in shape. Yeah. Your generation, same thing. But now with you, Joey, and then a lot of the guys are becoming big names, but there's not a lot of weightlifting and muscles involved.
Yeah, I honestly look like shit. I'm skinny fat.
Do you train?
Yeah. Okay. I when I was younger, I guess like there's that 26 where your metabolism just shits to bed.
Mm-hmm.
But I was like, I was always lean, and I always looked decent, and you know, and then all of a sudden, like out of nowhere, I'm just skinny fat. And I'm like, all right, I'll train, I'll work out 3-4 days a week, but I'm not I'm not meal prepping like a lot of these guys. Or
there's always diet and the so supplements and all that stuff. Yeah, and then obviously the steroids that everybody went through at the time, which
all,
is not
Yeah,
now.
The steroids are all garbage now.
Yeah, it's
they're
gone.
Watered down.
But it's like you almost don't have – that's part of the business that has disappeared in some ways. But, I mean, look at the Young Bucks. They're not physical. I mean, they're in good shape, but they're not like
– I was one of the first guys to wrestle the Young Bucks too and found them like years ago doing just like the same – that was like the same type of – I couldn't believe how tough they were and how good they were, and they're smart,
just innovative, smart. Obviously geniuses.
Their timing is really good, and they're simple enough. Like I said, they do a lot of cool shit, but they don't really do anything super dangerous. Kind of like that. I watch them a lot, and same with Kenny Omega. Like he doesn't one shooting star press, you could break your neck. One or two of these little other moves, I cut out of my business. Like where those are those little slips. Like a backflip's not too bad. If you start doing the twist on the backflip, like Jacks are doing two twists and stuff. A shooting star is okay. That's even hard enough because you got the straps underneath your boots, and sometimes you got cables, sometimes you got ropes, and each ring's different.
Never know, yeah.
Wrestling on indie shows.
That's a good point.
Indie shows are all different rings, and some have padding, some don't. Some have guardrails, some don't. Some have guardrails that are strapped in, so they move somehow. And so you're taking a chance. And at Young Bucks, I remember they told me, they're like, we're gonna stick to like this type of moveset, but work on our timing and combos. And I told them when they were younger, I said, you should probably jump on the juice. And they both kind of looked at me and said, no, we don't, that's not really what we're going to wrestle this way. And if we're good enough with this style, then we hope it gets over. And then like a couple years later, I saw them and they just kept getting better and better and better. And I was like, man, those guys. So I tried to tell everyone about them. And then like down the road later, you see them again and they went to TNA and same thing. They ripped it up with just normal bodies.
Yeah,
and but they were so talented, and their timing was so good, and their combos were so good that you couldn't deny their skill.
Well, you still have to have the cardio too. Like you said, you can't be going out there blowing up because that won't get you. But you look, you know, there's always guys in the business. Like one of my favorite workers and one of the best workers was Bobby Eaton. Bobby was never a physical specimen. Ricky Morton, same thing. Just didn't have the genetics for it and couldn't be bothered to get in the gas. And if he did, it probably wouldn't have worked anyways. And there ain't a better seller in the world other than Ricky Morton back in 1987. So it's not like it matters, but it's just a different mindset now though, right?
Yeah, I don't know if my cardio is good per se. I think I've gotten it down to the point that I can, if I'm calling a match and I can work it around. I smoke a pack of cigarettes a day, so I can cut that out. But
pacing is the most. I guess it's not even cardio. It's pacing. If you're smart enough to know what you're pacing, his pacing is really good.
It's way harder for me to do a Fozzy show than a wrestling match.
I was gonna say that last night. I told him. I said, man. I said it looks like he's moving so much. I said I don't know how the he's,
and then you got to sing and expand your energy. So there's a lot of times, especially if it's really hot on stage, I'll almost pass out. Whereas in wrestling, if you start getting a little bit blown up through the match, like you said, you can throw him out of the ring. You can take a bump outside. You can do a little submission. I'll do
double downs.
Three
double downs.
Rest hold, you know, that sort of thing.
Let's do a superplex.
Yeah.
That's another element is I don't know how you can be such a good, like, I mean, you look phenomenal on stage there and you were really good. I'm not a music guy. I listen to rap, but when you don't see a guy rapping on stage, you see it's always in the booth. And most of it, when you actually watch what guys in rap do, man, that song took weeks to make that song. He acts like he just went on there and floated. It's like that guy wrote a bunch of shit down, hit nine different guys in the back, cutting, and then you finally hear the song. It sounds great. Like, you don't realize the work.
Yeah.
Watching a rock and roll guy, I'm like, when I watched a guy on stage, how much moving and the timing and then the singing. And then I said, I couldn't sing and I can't dance. The two things that I could never do. I'd never dance ever. And I'll never do karaoke. It's embarrassing. Is it just my? I don't know how.
I'm gonna get you to do karaoke.
Yeah, maybe I'll try to do karaoke. One time. I mean, I'm getting over certain fears, but it was another huge thing. Was Vampiro, who's a hater and not really a fan. He said how, and one of the few times I heard him give a compliment, and because I think he has a little weird heat with you or something. He said Jericho's done an amazing job with his career in music. And that was the only compliment I heard come out of Vampiro's mouth towards, because he thought he was a music guy. He said he was the first guy to do it. And he had a band and he was going to do all this stuff. And he goes, man, and I said, he goes, do you have any idea how hard it is to do that? And I said, I have no idea. And he goes, you should probably watch some of these shows and look how much moving and jumping and stuff they have to do. And singing makes you tired. So I guess it does. So I started looking and I watched you very carefully last night. And then again, you're so talented and such a nice guy, one of the few real multifaceted superstars and funny and best promo guy. Benoit told me, he goes, that was the difference. He goes, on top of that, now I say you're the best wrestler ever.
Oh, thanks, man.
You really are. There's no one that's lasted. That you still look, and you still have big arms. You still look full. Your face is still very handsome. You still have your hair and your teeth.
You gotta hang out with Teddy Hart more often, man. I wish you were a chick. It'd be nice to hear that from a.
Raven was like a girl last night, giving compliments so to everyone that looked good. I never heard Raven so positive.
Oh yeah,
rip Raven's throat out a couple times at indie shows where he's giving advice and it's talking shit and just a straight bitter hater. And then he—I don't know if he had a spiritual awakening or if he's just mellowed out, but he was so nice and he was very complimentary. He said some nice things about you too. He's how Jericho's lasted the longest. I was saying, I said, I don't want to sound like I'm blowing smoke or trying to kiss guys' asses. I said, but I've been hard on a lot of guys and said a lot of shit and probably cost me jobs in the future. And maybe, you know, but a compliment out of me is all I have, is my word and my balls. And I said last night he was trying to bother you just about how you brought wrestling back to another level, and you're from Calgary and you're from Winnipeg and you're that last Canadian club. You're the last guy from the dungeon. Even though there's some bullshit about that whole thing, you made us. You did it on your own. I never put the hearts. The hearts didn't really help you.
Never. I couldn't even get on Bruce's.
But we know that between the scenes. But Lance and you were always nice enough to, for the fans that are out there, they believe that you were like. You know, Benoit did more. They took care of Benoit. They did not take care of you. They didn't take care of Lance, really. But you guys are always nice enough to put it back us, because a lot of students joined the school after.
Well, it gave you a little badge of honor, you know, to train in Calgary. And it's not like it's the dirtbag Dan, you know, it's the Hart brothers.
Keep our family alive. Yeah. You know, between us, you could have buried the Harts for being dicks, because they were. I wasn't a fan of what Pillman did to guys or what Bruce did to guys. They abused a lot of guys, man.
Yeah.
Shit on the dungeon, but the dungeon was brutal. And you went to the dungeon and did all your stuff. But Ed Langley's school, that was the same type of shit. It was like, it was never easy. It was never fun. Well, and it was so crazy cold in Calgary. Like,
talk about the dungeon a bit, because the dungeon has a little bit of what's the word I'm looking for? Like a fantasy about it.
Aura.
An aura about it, where it was like this amazing place, but it was
a shithole with cat shit. I mean, the dogs would go sneak down and piss on the mat sometimes, and the guys that are down there are sweating. It never was washed. All the holes in the roof, it was with a bunch of pipes that were hanging down that you hit your head on all the time. I remember hitting my head on those fucking pipes. Bruce would make you do a leapfrog, and he'd call a leapfrog knowing that if you leapfrog here, you're fine, but if you leapfrog over here, and Bruce is calling on the fly, so guys jump up and they hit their head on the pipe, and Bruce will go, sorry about that.
And once again, it's a basement with such a low roof. If you do a good leapfrog, you're going to hit the pipe.
Yeah.
And the ring was about six inches off the ground.
Yeah,
stiff. It wasn't even a ring. It was like a little boxing ring almost. I couldn't believe it. Like, yeah, like when I first went to the dungeon, like proper, I could not believe, like, this place is the shit. You know, it's like when they used to talk about the ECW arena, and like ECW arena, and the famous bingo hall. It was a shitty little hot building in the summer, freezing in the winter, but it had this mystique. And that's the same with the dungeon.
I think the last four graduates from the dungeon, or five, were me, TJ, Tyson Kidd, Harry Smith, Jack Evans, and Apocalypse. Eric, I forget.
The
Dissension, right?
Ascension, yeah. Victor.
Victor, I think his name is. Yeah. I'm terrible with WWE names. Like, I call Neville Pac. And there was another match you had with Neville.
Yeah.
That was phenomenal, too. And I was just saying, like, there's not too many guys in the world that can do that. It was a testament to how smart you were. But you also did a ton of shit, too. That's why I said, like, and you also took the worst bump I've ever seen in wrestling for an actual bump in the ring on your head. And I watched that a couple times, and I'm like, man, you have to be an angel, because if it wasn't for you, so many guys would never have got exposure. Like that Kenny Omega, that match changed wrestling history. For you to be able to go down there and do that for everyone else, it gives us all hope. Like, I saved The Rock and Cena. I gave them shit for having that weird match at WrestleMania the second time, but the first time they brought all that publicity to wrestling.
Yeah, they did
make wrestling better for us. The better you guys do, I always hope Shawn Michaels comes back for another match, because I like, same with Undertaker. Whenever I see him, even if it's just that one match a year, he made Roman Reigns look so good. He's such a beast. And there's certain guys that I'm like, I always thought, but I was so mad about Brett was the only guy that never came back for that big match. Everyone else that came back, that was had great matches still, but Brett wasn't able to. He just had the match with Vince, and he kind of just let it go. I don't think he was able to go to the gym a lot because of the concussion and then because of the stroke with his hands and stuff like that. But I thought that was basically the only other guy that should have been able to come back because he retired early enough and come back and have a match with Jericho or a match with Benoit, like an older one, or if they were alive, or a match with Eddie Guerrero, Bret Hart, like some, or Macho Man was another guy I always thought was one of the few other guys that I would have loved to see Macho Man Shawn Michaels in the future, Macho Man Jericho, or or even like my big thing is I'd love to wrestle The Rock once if I can. I don't think it'll ever happen, obviously, but I wanted to wrestle you or Shawn Michaels and like the few dream matches I have, and then to see that dream match happen with Kenny Omega, I'm like, you never know what could happen.
You never know what could happen, right? Joey, when you're talking about, it seems that you could try to do Ring of Honor or these ones, but you seem like you like bopping around and kind of being your own boss in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I just like the indies. You know, I don't want to be tied down somewhere. And of course, WWE is the goal, as it should be for
everybody,
any professional wrestler. That's right. Make a living, and if they have kids and send their kids to school and stuff, and it's just, that's the dream. And you know, Ring of Honor and TNA, there's always been feelers thrown at me, and I'm just like, I'm happy what I'm doing. You know, my pay rate goes up, you know, every few months, and I sell more t-shirts. It's like, it's wonderful, you know. It's just you're an independent contractor, you know. It's just, I did this for 12 years, and this is the first year consistently every weekend I'm on an airplane. I didn't get my first flight in professional wrestling until 2 years ago.
Oh, yeah?
So I was driving everywhere. So now it's different. Now I'm flying every weekend, and it's just something new to me. You know, it's just like, it really, I was a piece of shit back then. I was like a little shithead, you know, when I, ego, and I shouldn't have, because the way I got into business, I was an untrained backyarder. But now it's just all those years of hard work. It's just like getting the flights and going overseas to England, or going to wrestle in Tijuana in front of 10,000 people. It's just humbling. You know, it's just, I worked hard, you know, and I did it all myself.
Sure. And that's the thing. Nobody helped you.
No. People have helped me along the way the last few years. You know, Drew Gulak especially. He helped
Good
me
guy.
A lot. Yeah, he definitely helped me out a lot getting to this level that I'm at now. He saw something in me, and he started pushing me to promoters and helping me out, and then he left the WWE. And I've been to 60 seminars, camps with like a who's who in professional wrestling. That taught me a lot as well. And it's just different path, you know?
Right, sure. But to get to the same point. Now, Taylor, let me ask you a question. Your career has been so controversial in ways, and you've had chances and blew them, and then you're back again. And now it's like you mentioned, you have all these bookings. Is this, you know, being in the business for 21 years, are you a little bit more appreciative, and are you not going to be as crazy as you have been? Or is that just who you are as a guy?
I don't know. Again, we talked about crazy as a definition. I was always a smart businessman I'm not going to say criminal, but I was always able to get out of trouble, and reputation was more bullshit. I just think guys did not want to work after Teddy Hart. I mean, I was doing, instead of doing just a shooting star, I'd do a shooting star front twisting and another move, three minute back to back to back, just as a finish, even though I knew it was one. So I always thought working hard was me crazy, or why would you do a moonsault off of 20 feet? And it's like, well, because I have the name that was given to me, but I always thought I worked way harder than the Harts did, which is, if you come from the best wrestling family in the world or one of them, but you're actually doing all this shit, no guy could say that they gave, like, Brett never helped me out. Owen was dead. Davey was dead. Jim was the only guy that ever showed up for an indie book. You're the only guy that ever got me. You and Chris Benoit were the only two guys that ever even watched a tape or helped me out or bought me a meal or did anything in wrestling history for me. So I always thought, I'm like, why did I get called crazy? Was it because I did GHB when I was 18, 19, 20 years old? Or was it because I did all these moves? But if you ever, what move did I ever ask a guy to do that he got hurt on? So it's like,
I guess what I mean by crazy is like, you with your talent and your look, you're still in phenomenal shape. Why have you never stuck to one place?
Because
you could be a top guy.
I say this again, Triple H and Brett, that why there's no reason for Teddy Hart. WWE's lost hundreds of millions of dollars on, if I'm still wrestling now and AJ Styles walks in at 39 or 40 and is having all these matches, I always say physically there's not too many guys like that are, I'm 38 now, and I think I'm better now. And if I went to gymnastics for just a month,
I would hit every, I can hit every big move that wrestling's ever done. Like Ricochet's doing a double moonsault, he'll never do it again, he said. Neville said, I don't even know if he's booked anymore. Will Ospreay's the only other guy really that hits like a shooting star full twist or a backflip full twist, although Jack Evans is the other, like those are the, there's some difficult moves in wrestling that are left. I think I could do them perfectly now and once in a blue moon if I had the opportunity because of knowing, but that it's not about moves anymore. Now it's about the psychology and trying to make guys look good and trying to stay healthy, where before I never had to pay. If I got hurt, I was like, I never cared. It was like, I got $1 million. I got a rich wife. My dad's got his business. It didn't mean anything. Now I'm like, oh, every wrestler that's ever had to do all this stuff, that's all they have. So I always, now my respect for them is different. So my mentality of talking to guys is different. I'm way more humble of like of appreciating every guy that's doing this to feed his family. This is now my job, where now I'm like, oh, fuck, I understand. So just
maybe that's what it was. And crazy is not the right word, but maybe because you had other forms of income.
Wrestling, other guys that were looking to hire didn't need a job. I never sent a tape to WWE ever. I've never asked for a job ever. I would show up in a fucking ridiculous outfit almost just to be like whatever, and then I would be smoking pot everywhere too. Back in the day, that was another thing, is I would always roll up just to piss guys off in the back because I knew about all the pill heads and coke heads, and I'm like anti-drug most of the time. I don't really like drug addicts and drug, but I smoke a ton of pot, so I'm always more of like, I've never tried crystal meth. I've never taken a painkiller in my life. I've never done a line of cocaine. So when I was here and I sold, and I've been around drug dealers and Hells Angels and parties for all my life, I've always made money in that scene. But my willpower and my discipline for never doing that stupid shit, GHB got me. That was the only one. But it worked because I would go to the gym and I could heal and I could sleep. I always had trouble sleeping, and I've always taken steroids for 20 years. I've taken a very small amount of steroids since I was 17 years old, and I've never gone off. For all my life, I've always taken just a little bit. So my mentality was always try to get a job at eventually when I'm like 35, I'll be jacked. And then something, right when I get to 200 pounds, I start getting really big. I start looking really good. Something would happen. I'd have a small injury. I'd break my heel. Like a little things like would me up. So I never got to that level where I wanted to show Vince a picture where I was jacked, and then they could go, and he's doing all these moves, and he shut his mouth, and he's passing a piss test. I've never had that opportunity. Something always happens in my life. Like I did the show with Brett, and the only injury I ever had was like a small little one, and Brett was beating up Vince. That was the show with Brett. Vince,
right.
Batista was there. I was good friends with even you. That was after I met you at the bar, and you were really nice. So I had all these guys that were potentially in my corner. And Paul London does a spear on me during a match the night before the WrestleMania match and breaks my collarbone or blows and breaks my shoulder just right. So I was so depressed. Stephanie McMahon was trying to get me in there, and there was a friend of hers that was like a big fan of mine, and he was talking to Triple H. I showed up, and I remember I didn't even watch the match. I just went and ended up watching a guy training his pit bull to jump up and catch food. We ended up sitting outside this guy's house watching that. I remember thinking after him, like, you just missed possibly the last time you're ever going to see Brett in a ring. TJ, Harry, Natty, the whole family was there. They didn't even pay me. Everyone in the family collected $500 or $1,000 and got their hotel paid for. I wasn't even there. I was sitting in some fucking Phoenix with a broken shoulder. Remember, that was just like my last chance. I was like, oh, that fucked me. And then another time I was about to do something, I got put in jail. Or another time I was about to do something, and then bad luck. Yeah. Like, I just think I'm cursed to a point now where I literally say this to you, and like I asked Triple H openly to the world, like Steve Regal, if I said anything on a shoot interview to piss you, I watched the whole thing because I always say what happened, but then that's the truth. I'm not going to lie. But I always say the good thing after the end of it. Like Samoa Joe, if I give you shit on something, I also said you're phenomenal and congratulations on all you did do, but I thought you could go to the gym. Like if I said something bad, I always tried to follow it with something nice after. But a lot of times guys don't hear it, or they hear one thing and then they forget all the other stuff I said after. So my job is to point out the good. I want to do a book about tell all these great stories in wrestling and funny stories, and how all these guys were most of the time really nice guys at the end of the day. Once they were secure, they got their job, they got their money. I see them later, and almost every guy I ever thought was a prick or had a little problem with turned out to be a nice guy.
Yeah.
So my whole mentality of wrestling is to say sorry to the world of wrestling for not appreciating what it took to be a wrestler, because I was never a professional wrestler. I was a great wrestler, but I was never a professional wrestler. I didn't have to go on the road. I didn't have to pack a bag. I didn't have to get up and set my alarm. Like all the shit you guys do to do that consistent. Like, I worked a construction job for 3 weeks, and I never wanted to kill myself more. And I never, every guy I've ever seen that does any 9-to-5 job now, I have nothing but respect for, because getting up at 6 in the morning 6 days in a row was nuts, let alone that's your life. Every day you get up at 5:30, go to traffic, like sitting in traffic in the back of a truck with this hard hat on and a sandwich that I had to make the night before. And he goes, man, this is pretty cool. We're making $150. And I said, man, suicide. It was hot shit weather in Florida. And I had the warrant for my arrest. And I said, man, so I got a job at a strip club working at night as a bouncer and sitting in the parking lot. And that was cool for about 2 months. And I remember sitting in the chair thinking, this is going to be the rest of your life. You literally, without a high school diploma, I cheated my high school diploma. They told you that crazy story. So I have no degree. I have $1 million house in Calgary, which I have to wait because property value went up and down. We paid 1.4, the house dropped, it's $1 million now, so we lost $400,000 on the fucking investment. This is all I have left. I have nothing. I don't have any clothes, I have no shoes, no underwear, one toothpaste, one toothbrush. So I'm like, dude, this is suicide. I wanted to kill myself a couple times where I'm like questioning life. And then literally Joey had a match with me and brought me back. The fact that I knew your podcast, so many people listened to it, and they said, man, you were so honest on that podcast. You've been through a lot of shit. Chris was nice enough to let me talk. I said, I hope I didn't get myself blackballed for saying certain things. And I always regret, I'm like, I don't know if I should shut the fuck and bite my tongue or tell the truth. And that someday later they'll go, you know what? The guy was honest. He told the truth. He maybe said too much, or he's lived a crazy life. But whatever I can do to get a job in the future, ask Tyson Kidd. He says, give me 2 years of consistent indie bookings, at least a year with no problems. Good matches, no headaches, nothing. You can't control social media. So if a promoter that I have shut my mouth and I'm playing ball, I'm working hard. And that's all I ask, is that if Triple H had a problem with Brett, I'm not Brett. I had no control over what happened there. My favorite wrestler in the world was Shawn Michaels all these years,
but
and you.
But it's good, though, that Tyson is in the office now.
He's an agent. Yeah. And Johnny Ace is another guy that was like weird with me, but loved Tyson Kidd. And I told Tyson Kidd a up story that when I got fired, I said, well, what about TJ? Are they getting fired? And I had like complained about him. I said, man, that's such bullshit. And he told Johnny Ace, told TJ that. So TJ had a little heat with me for a couple years after, and I never talked to them. When I got released, we were all about to be on TV at the same time. Brett wrote his book, and I got released the next day after the book was released. And they said it was because Bruce Pritchard claimed it was because I did a backflip at a bar. When Steve Kern told me, I need you to do some cool shit, I'm making money on the gate here, and we're having lame matches, nobody really wants to do much because everyone's trying to save it for when they go on TV. He goes, so do some of your cool shit. Every show I did a backflip off the top to the floor for WWE for all the training. Like, so Bruce comes into town, he says, the guardrails are a little close, don't do any high spots. So Steve Kern's the booker, it's his show. Bruce is just there for one day, just coming just to watch. So we planned the moonsault, I did the moonsault. Bruce came and says, I'm talking to Vince about that. And I told the WWE, the FBI had called my house because some guy ribbed me and said that the FBI is coming to do an interview. They want to talk to you about steroids. This is right after Benoit died. And so you probably should let somebody know. So I went to my house, and I had one bottle of juice left. I had passed all my piss to WWE. I threw it in the garbage, and then I went and told Tom Pritchard. And Tom and I had already had our weird experience from like 10 years before. And Bruce was the one that fired me when I was 18 years old and slapped me across the face. And I never said anything about it. Weird shit. And I'm not going to really bury Bruce now. But it was along the lines of sexual assault type of shit where what Bruce did, because he was in a towel and he slapped me and I was fucked up. But it wasn't worth the heat of trying to make a big scene about it. But 10 years later, Bruce was the same guy that got me again. So Tom says, you got to tell Bruce. So I told Bruce, I said, I don't know if it's real or not, but the FBI might be coming to my house to talk to me about steroids, I said, because I had something mailed in the mail. And the guy that I mailed it to actually was so mad, he called his friend and they ribbed me and said that I had steroids sent to their house, so that the FBI is coming to get me. So I'm like an idiot. I went and told Tom Pritchard, he's my friend, and he says, you got to tell the office. Better you tell the office now in case if they come to your house and you don't warn them. So that no one knows why I was fired the second time. So that little combination of telling Bruce Pritchard that right before we went on TV, a week before we went on TV, then I got released a week after that. They fired me, only me though. Natty stayed, TJ stayed, Harry stayed, and they never signed Jack. They just left me and Jack sit. I went to Mexico after that, and I never got a chance to tell people, oh, he was hard to work with. I never said a word in WWE. I didn't set up one ring one time. There's the only other thing. We set up the ring every single day. I've been setting up rings since I was a kid.
Right.
So I was just like, oh, whatever. That was the only thing they could say about me. But Johnny Ace told Tyson Kidd that I bitched about him not getting fired, and I got fired, which wasn't the truth. So I always said to TJ, I don't know why John said that. I was really hot. And then later, I heard so many nice things about Johnny Ace, that he's a really nice guy now, that he's mellowed out a lot. And he helps a lot of the guys. And TJ said Johnny Ace was the reason he went back.
Mm-hmm.
So in the long scheme of things, Johnny Ace protecting TJ convinced him to go back. The only hope in hell I have is that some few guys maybe will just put in a word for me, like you, or and that Tyson Kidd is an agent, and that Vince and Shane McMahon was always a
fan. But like
of
you
mine.
Said, when Eddie got fired, he went on the indies for a year and didn't do drugs and didn't have any incidents. They brought him back and he became the biggest that he ever was.
So. I went to rehab too for WWE, and I never stopped. This is the only time I'm clean. I've always smoked pot. And I went to rehab for 2 months with them, and the guy that runs the rehab program, he knew WWE wasn't their fault, but the rehab place up with the piss test, so he knew, and he said, "I talked to Vince. Don't talk to them much because I'm not. But my drug job is to make sure to report that you did a great job in rehab this time." I went to rehab 3 times in WWE.
No, but if you
and
can
I always
stay clean this time, that could, this is real for you
them
now.
Off. This time it was jail time, and WWE was watching and said, "Don't waste our time," because Tyson Kidd and Natalya had to pull some strings to get me into the rehab because I had really no problems. So when I went there, I shut my mouth, and I realized again, this is my last chance. If I up any more little stupid shit where I'm just putting there's never gonna
seriously.
Be a day and I will have wasted my career. So I beg guys, I'm like, this is the only time where I'm openly asking for a job. Not right now. If they said to me right now, would you want to sign, I said, just give me 1 year just to keep doing what I'm doing and to learn the business and to get psychology and understand what it takes to be a wrestler now. And
Joey, just as we got a couple minutes left here, when you're talking about the Joey Janela's spring break, who's on top? Who's been the main event in this year?
Well, some guy named Joey Janela.
Yeah, of course. As any fine promoter will do.
versus Great Sasuke.
Oh, great. That's cool. Yeah. Is this another one of those ones where you put it on Facebook?
No, it was just like, who do you want to wrestle? Like, you wrestle Marty. Who do you want to wrestle this year? I said, Great Sasuke. I'm like, we can't get Sasuke. That's too crazy. So then I start hitting up Michinoku Pro offices, and they're ignoring my emails. I go, come on, I need Sasuke. So then I start hitting up wrestlers from Michinoku Pro, say, relay this to Sasuke. And finally, Kikutaro, he made a connection. Within 15 minutes, we had Sasuke booked. And
that's crazy.
And it was like, all right, I guess I'm wrestling Great Sasuke now. And he's excited because he hasn't wrestled in the States. And he rarely does singles matches these days in Japan. He does like big crazy comedy.
He's a senator or something, isn't he? He's like
he was
in the diet, Japanese diet or something like that. Yeah.
But this is a singles match, and he's ready to go. And
this happens at midnight is when the show starts.
Yeah, well, this match will be probably going on at like three, four this year.
He wrestled at 3 in the morning.
Yeah. It'd probably be me and Great Sasuke at like 4 a.m. in the morning.
There you go.
You know, and you know, it's we're gonna draw like double what we did last year.
Is this the biggest match of your career?
I'd say so. Yeah, there's a lot of eyes on it. You know, there's a lot of weird media outlets picking it up, like websites like Deadspin and like CBS Sports hit me up. They're like, oh, we want to cover your show and your match with Sasuke, and it's like all these people are hitting me up now. And so I guess it's the most publicized match of my career. And it's just great to bring Sasuke back to the States.
That's great, yeah.
One last time, especially in front of that crowd, is going to be rabid. You know, it's going to be like 2,500 people, you know. Just
that's
like,
crazy for an indie show, right?
Yeah, especially Mania weekend. Yeah. You know, we're beating right now. We're in the same building as Progress and Evolve, and those are two top independent dogs. So when you're beating them in ticket sales, I don't know, the tide is kind of...
What's it officially called? What's the company called? Is it just Joey Jones?
Oh, Game Changer Wrestling.
Oh, Game Changer Wrestling. Okay.
Yeah. And we're under like the Gabe Sapolsky WWN banner.
Gotcha.
They do like a little like, it's like South by Southwest.
They
run a bunch of shows in the building.
So, are you going to book Teddy on the show?
You know, I'm going to try to get Teddy to sit down with the promoter, Brett Lauderdale, over a nice plate of chicken wings. And they can talk out their issues. It's really like we had Teddy on the show, and then they're bitching to each other like husband and wife. And Teddy's trying to text Brett, and Brett's not responding. And you know,
I'm a big guy about respect on texting back. That's all. And Brett's busy with his promotion. Brett's another guy that came from basically nowhere and built a promotion up and did an unbelievable job. Because he's saying I never said anything good about him. So I will say now about Brett as a promoter has done a great job with GCW. They're drawing. I think they're the biggest drawing company in the Northeast that area. Like for that, what it is, they draw 700, 800 people.
Yeah,
it's going to be a huge show. And just don't take any bumps off the barn.
I don't know. I have to ask Sasuke.
It depends. Space flying tiger drop off the barn.
Yeah, yeah. He does something in a sake barrel now, where he puts a sake barrel on his head and then he falls off things and like whacks himself. You got to see this. Yeah, you ever see
I haven't seen that one yet.
You got it. It's like a gimmick. He goes in a sake. There's gonna be handles in there and padding. Because, like, they'll take off the padding of the ring, and then he'll, like, climb a scaffold, and they'll shake the scaffold, and it'll fall off and just, like, in the barrel and just, like, wipe out. And it's just – this is Sasuke today. This is him wrestling today in Japan. So people keep on asking me on Twitter, is he bringing the sake barrel off the rooftop?
But it's going to be a killer show, man. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
All right, Joey Janela's Spring Break 2 wrestling show is happening tonight at midnight in New Orleans. Go check it out. The only midnight show you need to see if you're here for WrestleMania. So much crazy stuff going on this weekend. But you want to see Joey main eventing with the great Sasuke, who's doing his first match in the United States in a long time. Teddy Hart will be there. Teddy's working all weekend as well. So much still going on at WrestleMania weekend. I hope you guys are having a great time. And I hope you are still thinking, if you haven't booked your cabin already for Chris Jericho's Rockin' Wrestling Rager at Sea, tickets are still selling. Cabins are going through the roof. For as little as $150, you can get your cabin. We're leaving October 27th from Miami to the Bahamas. And remember, once you book, everything's included in the booking price. And if you book before April 14th, you get a chance to win Fozzy Roadie for a day, or you can have a chance to win a ring sitting at ringside with me for the Ring of Honor tournament. I'll be sitting there with you, or get a chance to win dinner, have dinner with the Ring of Honor superstars. That's going to be crazy. But you got to book by April 14th, ChrisJerichoCruise.com. And remember, everything is all inclusive. You get to see Kenny Omega, Jim Ross, Jerry Lawler, SoCal Val, Mick Foley, Noel Foley, Ricky the Dragon, Steamboat, Rey Mysterio, Raven, Cyrus and Paul Lazenby, Conan, Disco Inferno, Shane Helms, Beyond the Darkness will be there telling some scary tales, Colt Cabana, Marty DeRosa doing their own professional wrestling show, Brad Williams, Ron Funch is keeping you laughing, the Busted Open Radio, Dave LaGreca, Music League, Corey Taylor is going to be there, the frontman of Slipknot and Stone Sour, Phil Campbell, the Bastard Sons, King, Fozzy, The Stir, the Dave Spivak Project will be there, the Cherry Bomb, Shoot to Thrill, Blizzard of Ozzy, and of course Ring of Honor presenting the Sea of Honor tournament aboard the ship. You'll get to see Kenny Omega, Young Bucks, the villain Marty Scurll, Briscoe Brothers, Dalton Castle, Kazarian, Adam Page, Christopher Daniels, new additions Deonna Purrazzo, Mandy Leon, Matt Taven, Flip Gordon, Delirious Kenny King, BJ Whitmer. It's going to be, the list goes on and on and on. Cody Rhodes, Brandy Rhodes, still more names and attractions to be added. Do not miss this cruise. It is going to sell out. We're going to do this every year. Come and make history with us and me. Of course, I'm going to be there. ChrisJerichoCruise.com. Don't you dare miss it. Go look it up now. All right. Next Wednesday, got a great surprise for you on the show. For the first time, we have who's going to be here? Hurricane Nita Strauss. She plays guitar for Alice Cooper. She's a huge wrestling fan. She's related to Johann Strauss, the famous composer from the 1800s. She's a trip. A great, great guest. I had a great time with her. I want you to hear this next Wednesday. A little more rock and roll with Hurricane Nita Strauss, kicking ass as a female playing guitar for Alice Cooper. So we'll see you on Wednesday. Have a great WrestleMania weekend. If you're in the Hampton Beach area, we'll see you at Wally's. Other than that, have a great time. In the meantime, and in between time, stay hard, stay hungry, peace, love, and hugs, and a big yeah, boy!